Welcome to Houseplant Homebody. I'm your host, Holly, and I'm here to tell you all about my favorite things, plants. Are you ready? Well, hello. Welcome to Houseplant Homebody again. So in the last episode, I told you a few lies. So we're going to start right there. So I lied about the episodes that are coming up. Plant chit chat is not happening right away, but I do plan on doing that in the near future, trying to figure out more of the logistics of it, who I'm talking to, all that good stuff. So plant chit chat was fun with Sierra. It might still be Sierra in the future. It might be other friends. It might be someone random. I don't know yet, but I'm going to continue, just not yet. And then what I also lied about is the podcast episode cadence release. So I didn't lie about it for the longest time because, you know, life happened. Peter and I got married. My sister had her third baby. Peter and I bought a house. It was a lot going on. I recently got a new job. Still stressful at the moment, but you know, whatever. It's fine. Powering through it. But all of that kind of put a hold up on Houseplant Homebody and what I really want to do with it. I thought maybe it would be a better work-life balance if I decided to step back a little bit from Houseplant Homebody and kind of do it in a different way. I learned that was not the best way to do it. Probably in the time it was, because I needed to focus on other things, but right now, no. I missed it. I wanted to come back to it. I really miss talking to you guys more often. I miss interacting with you guys more often, and I miss doing the research and learning, which is really the whole point, is for us to learn together about all of this. So that's why I'm back in it, and that's what we're doing. We're going to reiterate some of the updates that I've already gone over in social media just in case you've missed them. Number one, podcast is being released bi-weekly again. There's only going to be one break around the holidays, and I think that will be it. It'll probably be like end of November into December, probably into beginning of January, honestly, just because I am usually so busy. All three of my nieces' birthdays are in that timeline. And then there's Thanksgiving, Christmas, and my best friend's birthday and my husband's birthday are all in those 2 months. So we're probably taking a break then. And then the newsletter is the only thing that really hasn't changed, so that'll still be quarterly. And I found that the best because I'm doing it a little bit ahead of each season, which is great for preparing houseplants, understanding what you have to do, kind of like a checkpoint for you. So February, May, August, November is when the overall newsletter is coming out. You may still receive emails, not newsletters necessarily, but emails if you're subscribed to the website and stuff like that, because when a blog post drops, you get an email, all that good stuff. And then if you've been living under a rock and you didn't know, I have merch online. So I have released merch officially. Just, I think it was end of November, beginning of December that I released it. And I only have a few things left. I have some t-shirts left. I do have a cute crew neck that says In My Plant Era left. And then I do have a couple of holiday crew necks that are 30% off. If you go to houseplant-homebody.com and go to the shop tab, you'll see what's left on there. And there's more coming soon. I'm absolutely obsessed. I have a heat press. It's so fun to do. And I'm planning on doing digital products and stuff like that as well in the near future. So stay tuned for that. That's all my updates. I thought I had more, but that's it. So we're going to get back into it. Let's dive into what the topic is today. And that is Medium Explained. And this is episode 86. So medium really is just an overarching term for whatever you're using to put your plant in. That's what I would call it. So that could be a soil, it could be a mixture. It's whatever your personal preference is, kind of mixed with the environment that you have your plant in and what plant you're dealing with. I truly believe there's no one true answer about soil. I know some people are very particular about what they use and what they don't use. I tend to be more relaxed about it. Some people might be doing it very different than me, and that's honestly okay. I'm here to give you all of the details, share what I do, and then you can kind of do what you need to or what you think you want to based on your budget, based on your time, all that stuff, based on the information I'm going to give you. And that's the whole point. I really want to hone in on that. People always ask very specific questions, and there's so many different factors that go into it. Understanding those different factors and how you are looking at your plants is very important, and soil is one of them, but I don't think it is the overarching end-all be-all. I still think watering and light are the two big things. Anyways, rant over. The whole point of this is medium. Soil, potting mix, LECA, charcoal, coco coir, peat moss, all of these different things is what we're going to go into. So how I'm going to structure this kind of episode is explain kind of the differences between like a potting mix, potting soil, go through all of the ingredients that might be in those, what those soil recommendations you might see on my podcast episodes, blog posts, or when I'm talking on social media, what my recommendations might mean, what kind of potting mixes companies are out there that I would recommend or that I've just seen kind of in me doing my research, seeing them on social media, all those things. What I specifically do for specific types of plants. And then obviously we have an Instagram Q&A, which is just chock full with questions. I absolutely love it when you guys hand me a ton of questions to go over. So we're going to stop from the top. No, we're going to start from the top. What does potting mix or potting soil mean? And what you might not know is there actually is a technical difference to those two terms. And it's literally just the lack of soil or presence of soil. Most people use them interchangeably, and honestly, I do too, but there is a difference. Potting mix does not contain soil. Potting soil does contain actual soil. Both of those things might have the same amendments in them, though. A potting soil might have soil with peat moss, bark, and perlite, but a potting mix might have peat moss, bark, and perlite, just without the soil. Those are the two main differences. Usually potting soil is used on outdoor uses or gardening because it's typically heavier and more dense. It really depends on the company and the brand and the product you're using, though. So if you're using like a dollar square foot bag of like potting soil or like even topsoil or something like that, that's going to be super heavy. But there are companies like Fox Farm, who I buy from exclusively at this point, that have a potting soil that has other things mixed in it, like they have a lot of perlite in it and things like that. And I do use those for my houseplants. So I'll explain that a little bit later. Usually used for outdoor use, can be used for houseplants depending on what you mix with it or what it's composed of. Potting mix is just everything under the sun mixed together that doesn't include soil. Usually this can be a slew of things, and I'll go through all of the ingredients, but it could be peat moss, coco coir, perlite, vermiculite, bark, anything. It's usually a lighter weight, more aerated mixture. Most of the time you're going to see a lot of people using a potting mix or like a chunky mix for like aeroids and things that need more airflow and drainage. The one thing that I will say about potting soil versus mix is soil itself has a lot of nutrients because it is an active living organism. The nutrients are still heavily there. In a potting mix, since it doesn't have the active soil, it doesn't have as many rich nutrients like that. It still has nutrients, it's just not as rich. So you may need to replace your mix or refresh your mix more often than you would a potting soil. Or you may need to provide a fertilizer in a potting mix right away versus a potting soil. Sometimes you don't have to. It really, really, really depends though. I want to emphasize that. There are some potting soils that literally have fertilizer in them. You might see like a Miracle-Grow bag that says last 6 months or something like that. That means it has like a slow release fertilizer in it. Just be really conscious about what you're purchasing and like what is on the description. I think that's important. Okay, we're gonna go into all of the ingredients because there's a lot. I didn't even cover all of them, but I covered almost everything that I have seen, used, dealt with, or has been in the books that I have, which by the way, there are a ton of my books contain information about soil in them. If you get like a plant related book or like a plant detail book where it's like talks about the Monstera deliciosa, Monstera donsoni, like that kind of thing, usually in the beginning or the back of the book, there's information about pests, soil, watering, all that stuff. It's very helpful. So I think 12 or 13 of my books had everything to do with soil. Even if it was a little paragraph, I still read it just in case. So we're going to dive into all of the ingredients. Okay, we're just going to start with soil. The SSSA, which is the Soil Science Society of America, defines soil as a mixture of minerals, dead and alive organisms, organic materials, air, and water. And that is as brief as I'm going to make it because it can get more complicated than that. I'm just not going to. So that's typically a potting soil. You're going to have, hello, soil. The next thing that I put on here is compost. This is decaying organic matter usually used for soil amendment and plant fertilization. Most of the time, soil and compost, most of the time, are heavily used in landscaping and gardening. Compost you're going to want in gardening for the extra nutrients and soil amendment. Obviously, soil you can and will use in some houseplants, but compost typically you're going to be using outside more. Not to say you can't use it inside, but you are going to use it outside more often. The next thing I'm going to bring up is sphagnum peat moss and peat moss. So sphagnum peat moss is a lightweight moss that can retain moisture. Peat moss is just the decaying version of it. I also want to put out the caveat that there are plenty of articles and really evidence that peat moss, peat bogs is where they come from, are not exactly environmentally great. They have some negative impacts to them. What happens is the CO2 is released a lot faster and I guess more when harvesting peat moss or sphagnum peat moss in the peat bogs. So there are a lot of people that are trying to find alternatives to this and slow it down, see if production can be changed a little bit on peat moss. Bottom line is peat moss takes forever to regrow or rebuild. So they are trying to find ways of moving away from that and moving towards other things. Some countries have banned it altogether. I put a ton of articles, I think five or six articles at the bottom of my blog post that go into detail about this problem. Some that argue it, some that are for it, some that have alternatives for it. So you kind of get it like an overarching view of everything, and then I'll have you make your own decisions there. But it tends to have negative environmental impacts when they are harvesting it from the peat box. But still, it is very much used in horticulture industry until people are kind of finding and using the alternative. Sphagnum peat moss is very much used for like moss poles for like monsteras. A lot of the times I even use it. What I'm finding is there are alternatives like cocoa core or cocoa husks. That's usually the alternative. The point of using peat moss though, the actual moss can be used to retain moisture and it's very good for aeration. It's lightweight. Peat moss itself is the decaying version of it. So it's like a soil texture. It's just a lightweight ingredient that helps retain moisture, but still aeration is good for it too. The alternative is coco coir. So usually this is used for the exact same thing that peat moss would be used because it is a lightweight ingredient and it still does help retain moisture. I saw a couple articles online saying that it takes a lot less to have the coco coir retain the moisture than the sphagnum peat moss. So sphagnum peat moss sometimes is hard to re-moisten once you get it dried out, and coco coir doesn't have that problem. So just an alternative if you don't want to use peat moss. If you are conscious of that, check the what's listed as ingredients on your soil or your mix. Usually it will list exactly what's in there. Okay, the next thing we're going to talk about is LECA, which actually is abbreviated for lightweight expanded clay aggregate. These are just baked clay balls that expand when you soak them in water. And many people use this as an alternative growing medium and a propagation medium. I have never personally used them. I really want to try it, but I don't have any plants I'm willing to risk on it right now. I've seen people grow full grown plants in this. I've also seen people do a lot of propagating in this, and it's just a really good alternative. If you're a chronic overwaterer, this is kind of an alternative to it. You don't want the roots sitting in the water. You want there to be water availability to the LECA to be brought up to the root system as it needs it. So sometimes a self-watering system is a good use of this. And then it is kind of cool because you can really see where the roots are going and what they look like. So if you pulled the plant out of LECA, typically the roots are attached to all of the clay balls and you'll be able to see the root system very, very well and see how healthy it is or if it needs help or whatnot. So the only downfall to this is sometimes if you have like a brand new plant, you're kind of transferring to LECA, some of the tiny little roots are not going to sustain in this and you're going to probably have a little bit of a setback, but I really only saw that on a couple articles about LECA, and I've seen a ton of people on social media have really good luck with them. So that's LECA. The next thing is perlite. So this is a granular mineral that increases aeration and drainage. I use perlite in almost all of my plants just because it's easy, it's cheap, it's lightweight, so it's easy to lug around. And that's why I like it, and that's why I typically use it. And I can see it, so I can really see the mixture of how much soil or whatever I'm using versus perlite is in the mixture I'm using. So perlite is one thing I use. Vermiculite is another thing. It increases drainage and retains moisture and nutrients. Vermiculite isn't something I used on my houseplants at all. We did use to sell at the garden center a decent amount though. So you can use it on outdoor stuff as well, obviously, but it's basically just an alternative to increase drainage while retaining the moisture and nutrients. Another thing, it's kind of similar to perlite every time that I've interacted with it. It is lightweight. Perlite is usually white, but the vermiculite is usually like a tannish, grayish color, but kind of similar texture and similar weight every time I've interacted with it. Next thing I'm going to talk about is bark, and I'm going to pair this with cocoa husk because these have very similar uses and very similar textures, probably depending on where you get them or who you get them from. But bottom line is they help with aeration, and the actual husk or bark will absorb moisture and then release it when it's needed. So 9 times out of 10, you will hear people talk about this typically with orchids. So I have my potting soil that I get from Fox Farm, and I mix perlite and I mix bark together to kind of keep the moisture but have immense amount of aeration in it. And that's what I do. So that's what I use bark for. I've also put bark in moss poles for my aeroid plants that I've done in the past too, just as another thing to kind of latch onto besides moss that actually helps hold the moisture way more. So that is bark and cocoa husk. The next thing is sand. Usually people are using this a lot of times with cacti and succulents, but this is to help aeration in heavier soils. I will call out that you want to make sure it is horticulture sand, because if it's normal sand you get from the side of the road, it could have a lot of lime in it, which could cause some calcium buildup and things like that that could be an issue with your plants. So just watch out for that. The same kind of thing goes for charcoal. You want to make sure you have an activated charcoal or horticultural charcoal, which is the next thing I'm going to talk about. So charcoal has a lot of positive benefits. Most of the time, I always saw charcoal with terrarium kits, and this kind of explains the definition of why. Because it provides good drainage, obviously, but it also traps soil odors, removes acids from the mix, and has antibacterial properties. So this is great for a terrarium or a vessel that you have that's going to have locked in moisture, because it's really going to help with all of the negative possibilities that you might encounter with that kind of stuff. So that's charcoal. And then the last thing is pumice. Most of the time, I will not find this very often. It was in a couple of my books. We did sell at the garden center, but it's a porous lava rock that only helps with aeration and drainage. It's just another possibility for what a lot of these other ingredients can do. If for some reason you don't have access to some of the other ones, then at least you have another alternative if possible. So that was a lot of detail. It is all detailed on the blog if you need to go reference it and figure out what you need. But this is what I mean by I don't think there's one answer for everything. There's several things that can do almost the same thing, and it really depends on what you prefer. We're going to go into what soil mix recommendations mean, and then potting mix companies. All right. So a lot of times you'll hear different kinds of soil recommendations if you're looking at podcast episodes, blogs, people talking about it on social media, and you'll hear well draining a lot, like a lot. And then you won't really hear much else besides maybe chunky. And then once in a while, you'll get like a moisture retaining list or example. But we're just going to go through them. If I ever recommend a well-draining soil, it can mean a lot of things. In my mind, it usually means like a standard potting soil or a potting mix that allows water to flow through it. So if you're going to use a potting soil, adding like a perlite or a bark or any kind of amendment just to help the drainage is what I would recommend, not just a straight potting soil. If I were to recommend like a chunky, coarse soil mix, well, not really soil mix, it would be potting mix. that won't contain soil, and it will have larger kind of ingredients to help with drainage and airflow and everything. So a bark, moss, leca, perlite, even cocoa husk or maybe even cocoa core. That's what I'm talking about. It's not going to have actual soil in it. Moisture retaining, when I typically do it, I'm typically using my Fox Farm potting soil, and that's it. Because it does have some aeration, it has some perlite in already. It's already set up for that. It is already kind of a lightweight mixture. But if I'm using something else, like a bark or something as a standard, I would definitely put soil with it. I wouldn't just use any kind of like bark or whatnot. I would put something else with that. So moisture retaining usually contains potting soil, and then you can mix it with other things depending on what the original soil talks about. It's a very brief explanation. 9 times out of 10, you're going to hear well draining, and that can mean a slew of things, but I just think it means make sure it has something to help you with drainage and airflow. So usually that's like maybe something added. Obviously, there are a ton of soils out there that already have this in it, and we're going to go through some of those kind of companies that you can work with on that one, but I hope that helps a little bit. We're going to go into some of the potting mix companies out there. I want to start prefacing with, I know there are really big companies like Scotts Miracle-Gro, Sungrow Black Gold, and Home Depot has the Vigoro brand as well. Those are usually specializing in potting soil, outdoor mixes. So I kind of wanted to give you a list that you don't hear of very often, or you want to shop a little bit smaller. These are still some big companies in here, but in my opinion, they're going to give you quality over quantity any day. So we're going to start with my favorite and my love, Fox Farm Soil and Fertilizer Company. I personally love this brand. One, the packaging itself is amazing. That's a selling point in itself. But I've continued to use their soil and their fertilizer for a very long time, and I really like it. The company was created in 1980 in California. They had some specializations that they needed, and they really do a good job with gardening amendments, gardening soil, potting mixes for outdoor plants, all that stuff. But their customer service is amazing, because I reached out just double checking and asking for houseplants what they would recommend for fertilizer and soil. I kind of had an assumption, but I wanted to know what they would recommend, and they got back to me almost immediately and they gave me some recommendations. So what I buy is a potting soil from them, and I do buy a concentrate fertilizer from them. I just use a little bit less than recommended, so it's not so concentrate, so I don't burn my houseplants and stuff like that. Obviously, fertilizer is a different story, but I do use their potting mix. They have an Ocean Forest and a Happy Frog potting mix that I've used both of them. So they are not in any big box stores, which is why I also love them. So around here, at least in the Midwest, Stein's Garden Center is a company they're at. Even Meyer's Grocery Store they are at as well. And then some other local garden centers you're going to find them at easily. For example, Bayside Garden Center, they're there. Kellner's Greenhouse, they're also there in Milwaukee. So Fox Farm is the name of that. They don't have any specific soils for houseplants, so you're going to find potting soils, and then you're going to go from there. The next company is called Soul Soils. This is actually a very recently founded Minneapolis-based company, and they are very well known for their potting mixes and their soil amendments, and they even have some soil toppers, which is kind of cool. They're a peat-free potting mix, and they're really well known for their extra chunky soil mixes that are already done up for you. The other fun thing about them is they plant a tree for every bag sold to support Eden reforestation projects, which is also very interesting. But I started seeing them at plant shows, but I also started seeing them on social media. I think they do a lot of the affiliate type marketing. And I have seen them in a ton of small plant shops and small businesses. So it's interesting that they got those mixes all together already set for you. So if you're really interested in getting a highly aerated formula and you don't want to buy all the components yourself, Soul Soils is the way to go. Obviously, they're small business, so they are going to be a little bit more pricey. All the companies I'm really going to be recommending are not going to be your cheapest. So just keep that in mind. There's absolutely nothing wrong with going back to like a Miracle-Gro houseplant soil or anything like that if you need to, budget-wise and stuff like that, or whatever, an off-brand even. But I would just make sure you're looking at the ingredients yourself and making the judgment that way. Okay, the next company is called Rosy Soil. This is also a newer company that I've been seeing around in small businesses and some larger businesses, but these are also peat-free mixtures. They have what's called biochar, is what they use as one of the main ingredients. But the actual website is pretty helpful and they have good combinations. They don't overdo it with the different types of houseplant mixtures or whatever. They have a houseplant mixture, a cactus mixture, and that's pretty much it. But I still would recommend them. The next one is Espoma. Espoma is more known for landscaping side of things, but I personally really liked them when I was working at the garden center. Their fertilizer line was great, and what they had available was great on a landscape side. I don't think I'm going to go into detail there. I just wanted to mention them because they do have specialized potting mix like cacti or houseplant specific or whatever, and some of the ingredients. So I used to buy the perlite, and they used to have vermiculite and stuff like that from Espoma. So I just wanted to mention them because they are an organic company. The last one is Good Dirt. So I've seen this sold at a lot of the small businesses in my area, and they do landscaping or gardening and indoor planting, a good mix of it. And they have something interesting, what's called dirt in a box. So they had a sustainable way of bringing potting mix to you instead of the plastic bags. So they did it in a box. I also thought that was very interesting and worth mentioning. Those are all of the different potting mix companies that are small that I think are a little bit more interested in typically being more conscious of their ingredients, their customers, and kind of the impact they make in general. I want to reiterate, when I first started collecting houseplants and growing with them, I had $0 to put towards anything extra. So I use bottom of the barrel type soil, and I would typically try to get some sand or something from work and mix it in. I mean, DIY it, do however you can. If you can't afford some of the smaller stuff, it's okay. Just do what you can. I guarantee your plants aren't going to be that picky about it. And I think this is where people get hung up. I had very big successes with houseplants in the crappiest soils, and I had very big successes with houseplants in the most refined, beautiful soils. So it's plants are resilient. Depends on what plant you're talking to, but I don't think soil is end all be all to any kind of problems you're going to have. Those are the types of companies that I would recommend, but obviously do what's best for you. Okay, we're going to go into what do I use and then the Instagram Q&A. I mentioned this already a few times while I've been talking because I can't help myself and I just ad-libbed all of this, but I'm going to break this into kind of four sections. So most of my houseplants, probably, I would say 95% of my houseplants, I just use Fox Farm potting mix and I add perlite. And that is all I do. I don't want to overcomplicate it. I don't have the budget to have five different things, nor do I have the time to be mixing 10 different things together or, you know, adding 15 other different things. I'm exaggerating, but I just have the opinion that I can still be successful with very minimal extra things. So that is all I do. Sometimes, depending on the plant, I might add more perlite or I might use less perlite. So that is what I do. The second option, really, for mostly ferns and higher moisture plants, I will just use the Fox Farm potting mix. I know I'm buying a high quality potting mix, and I know it does already have perlite in it for a little bit aeration and drainage. So I don't feel the need to be mixing any other amendments with it whatsoever. So that's what I do for ferns and the higher moisture plants. Orchids, I think, are the weird thing. I've used just bark before. That did nothing for me. I tend to underwater, and if you're gonna underwater plants, bark is not the thing. So what I did is I combined 50% potting mix, or potting soil, sorry, potting soil, 30% bark, because I still want the aeration from the bark and the moisture retention from bark, and perlite for drainage. And then I have those propped up in a saucer filled with rocks to help with humidity, catch drainage, all that good stuff. That is what I do for orchids. That is way more specific than I would want to get, but I haven't been able to get my orchids to bloom for years. And I honestly think it's because I had them in just bark for the longest time and I wasn't watering them enough. So they are now in a south window that somewhat gets blocked from a building, actually. Kind of almost the same as my mother-in-law's house. And I have them next to my kitchen sink, so that way I can water them easily. And I have all that soil mixture, or that potting mixture. See what I mean by it's very interchangeable? Soil mixture, potting mixture, whatever. You know what I mean. The potting mixture together. That's very specific. I don't like that I got that specific. I really want them to bloom. And I refuse to do a podcast episode on orchids until I actually get them to bloom. And then my best friend Sierra gets her orchid to bloom every year. So, you know, we can't all be perfect. But I will not do a podcast episode until I get to bloom. So I was trying everything. And trying everything meant changing the soil to something way more specific. And that's what I did. I already had bark and I already had perlite available. I didn't go back out and buy those, so that's what I used. And the fourth one, the last one, is cacti and succulents. So I have a ton of cacti, and I don't really have succulents. I probably only have like versions of them, like a couple string of pearls and stuff like that. But I wouldn't qualify them as succulents while talking about this. But in that case, I would still use my potting soil, and I would use a lot more perlite. So in the past, I have bought specific cacti succulent soil, totally okay to do because everything is already there. But if you don't want to do that, you just mix more perlite in. What they really need is drainage, and adding that perlite is going to give you more drainage, more aeration, so the water can flow through and it doesn't stay in the soil as much. So that's what I do. As I say, there's no right way to do this. That's what I do. If you want to mix a bunch of things, go for it. If you don't want to mix anything, go for it. Try it. See if it works for you. Totally dependent on the plant, the environment, where you have it, all that good stuff. So we're going to jump into the Instagram Q&A now. Remember Instagram Q&A? I mean, it is Instagram, but it does go on to Facebook too. But I'm pretty sure on Facebook, you can't actually answer the questions. But message me or like DM me if you have a question in your listening from Facebook, or not listening from Facebook, looking at it through Facebook. Oh my gosh. Anyways, I call it Instagram Q&A because that's where you can answer them. But for every podcast episode, I ask questions about the episode. And I'm like, hey, what do you want to know? What are you curious about? I also highly recommend you tell me your opinions and your hot takes because I want them all. And I want to talk about them at the end of each episode. So you guys gave me lots of questions and we're going to dive into them. The first one is, what is the best medium to propagate in? I want to start with the caveat that I plan on doing a propagation episode very, very soon in the near future, probably before the summer. So I'm not going to go into great detail here because I also think this is a very similar opinion as talking about mediums. I don't think there's a good one way of doing it. Me personally, I love water propagating, not even a medium, just water, because I love seeing the root system. I like knowing what's going on, and I've had really good success almost every single time with water propagation. That being said, I've seen a ton of people have great success with perlite soil mixtures in peat moss, coco core, LECA, all that stuff. I promise you I will get in way more detail on that, but I preferably like to do it in water. There are some plants that don't succeed as well in water. Like if you wanted to propagate like a string of hearts or a string of pearls, yeah, you're not going to do that in water. That's usually going to be like on top of soil mixture of some sort with like high moisture or something like that. But usually I'm propagating a pothos, a philodendron, a syngonium, anything like that, and that loves to be propagated in water. Avocados also do avocados. That episode's coming eventually. So that's what I'm going to say. I don't want to go into detail, but it's also, I don't have a perfect answer for that because I don't think there is a perfect answer for that. Okay, the next question is, what is the difference between PON and LECA? Is one easier than the other? So I didn't mention PON above because that's not one of the main things I think that's really out there. LECA, I feel like, is way more used than PON, but it is a thing. It is out there and it is used by many people. I had it at the garden center, didn't really use it that much, but hello, I haven't used LECA either. So the main difference is PON is made, it's basically gravel. It's very small size. Gravel versus LECA is baked, balled up clay. And that's really the big difference between the two of them. But I'm going to go through some of the differences. That way you can kind of assume which one is easier to use than the other based on these. I honestly don't think there is a true answer. It probably is more of a personal preference. Based on everything I have seen, I will tell you at the end of all these suggestions, but typically PON is going to be more expensive than LECA. PON retains moisture more than LECA does. PON is much heavier than LECA because it's basically stone. both have the potential to reduce pests almost equally. So fungal gnats and mealybugs specifically, you're really not going to see improvement with like spider mites or thrips or anything like that, because those live on the leaf. But fungal gnats and mealybugs, you may see a reduction in that. The downfall to LECA is you really need to remove almost 100% of the soil and kind of clean the root system before you use the LECA. In pond, you don't. Obviously, you're going to want to clean the root system off a little bit, but it's not something you have to be particular about. And then usually there is prep for LECA that's not needed for pond. I guess you don't have to do this, but it is recommended that you rinse off LECA and then you soak it before you use it. Similar to sphagnum peat moss, where you have to kind of soak it before you're using it. But those are all of the random things out there. Based on everything I said, it sounds like pond is a lot easier to use, I think. Do I think LECA is prettier? Yeah. They have, since it's clay, there's a ton of colored things out there. And I think LECA looks cooler because I am obsessed with that terracotta color. And pond is basically just like small gravel or like pebbles. And it's more expensive. So, you know, me and my cost effectiveness, I would rather use LECA since it kind of gets the job done just in a different way. I know there's negatives and positives to both. Pond is easier depending on what you're doing with it or how you're using it. LECA might be better. So I'm going to let you assume. Obviously, all of those are detailed on the blog post if you kind of like look at them again. But those are the differences. I don't have an answer for which one's easier because I've never used the two of them, but there are pros and cons to both. I'm glad I was helpful for half of that question. Okay, the next question goes, do you use DIY soil? Yes, I do. Mine is super basic. We've talked about this, I think, several times in here, but someone did ask a question. It is super basic. I really only use a combination of three different things for an actual potting mix. I'm using the potting soil, I'm using bark, and I'm using perlite, depending on what it is. I will use sphagnum peat moss, not the actual moss stuff, in a moss pole with bark. That's the only time I'm really using it. Sometimes I'll put it on top for like dressing, but usually not. Usually I'll just sprinkle some extra perlite on top. But that's really all I do. If you go in the blog post and go back to the how do I use my medium, that will go into detail about what I use for what again. But yeah, I keep it super basic. All right, next question is, have you found a good way to store your media? I've mixed some together and it molded. I've tried a lot of different things. I've kept it in the bag in the past and just rolled it up and said good luck. I've kept it outside, big mistake. I've kept it inside, much better. I've kept it in a closed container, that wasn't good. And I've kept it in an open container, which is probably fine. But what I've learned to do is I will get a plastic storage bin. I've poked holes in it on the top and a little bit on the sides, at the top on the sides, not obviously down the whole side. It's not going to be draining out the soil. And then my other items like my perlite and my bark, I keep in their individual bags. And then I just roll up the bags. And if they fit at the top of the potting mix or potting soil bin that I have, then I'll just put them on top in there, or I'll keep them separate. Probably what I should do is empty the perlite and the bark into a similar situation, just smaller bins. I just haven't done that yet. So the cheapest plastic bin you could find, honestly, from any store, usually probably the cheapest one you're going to find is $5. Typically, from what I know, they're probably closer to around 10, I think, 10 to 12. Putting the holes in it, so it has some aeration in it. And then what I like to do is I like to mix the soil a little bit in between my plantings just to make sure it's not stagnant and it's not getting all like algae moldy in the bottom and the sides, if that's possible, I guess. But I tend to always have some algae growing in the bottom corners of the bin almost every time, even with the aeration and everything. So that's how I have found to store it the best, at least. All right. And the last question is my sister trying to be funny. She probably didn't even know I was going to include this, so it'll be a surprise when she listened to this. But my sister's comment was, dirt. Dirt is my hot take. So thank you, Lindsay, for sharing your hot take. But I'm going to take this very funny comment and turn it into a like one sentence learning lesson. And that is, did you know soil and dirt are different? I'm sure some of you did. But soil is alive. It contains organisms and organic matter. It supports life. While dirt does not support any life. It's dead. It is what it is. You know, the more you know. I thought I'd take that opportunity just to explain that. They are different. Okay, thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned because I'm going to kind of reiterate some of the things I said in the beginning just in case you missed it. And then I am going to tell you what the next episode is so you can be prepared. So hang on. Well, hello. Thanks for tuning in to Houseplant Homebody episode 86 about Medium Explained. I hope all of this was super helpful. I know the blog post is chocked full of details if you need to reference it. Remember, if you're interested in learning about peat moss and any kind of environmental effects or impacts it may have, I've got those articles at the bottom of the blog post. Please remember to save the social media posts, to like them. Please comment. Tell me what you thought, what you learned on them. If you're on Pinterest, I'm going to start pinning all of these. And then pretty soon, YouTube will have all of my episodes up so you can listen there as well. That is an additional update I forgot to mention at the beginning of the episode. I am going to do YouTube, but it's only really going to be the audio listening that way. But I know a lot of people like to listen through YouTube, so I was going to do that. And then as a reiteration, the podcast is now released biweekly with its corresponding blog posts. Hallelujah. We'll be taking a break around the holidays because all of the birthdays and events that happen around then. The newsletter is the same. February, May, August, November. The day is not specific. Usually it's just beginning of the month. And then if you were living under a rock, merch is available and more will be coming. So currently there's some t-shirts, a few crew necks left, and then there's 30% off some of the holiday crew necks that are left over as well. But more to come on that, and I'm very excited. So I appreciate you guys still hanging on while I pivot through this business. This will just continue growing like it has for a very long time, now almost 4 years, I think. So I'm very excited to see where 2024 brings us once we get to more consistent podcast episodes and all the fun stuff again. Thank you for listening. Next time, the next episode will be about Easter lilies. I figured we might as well mix it up with some spring stuff. Not exactly a houseplant, but I think it's a significant one to talk about. Kind of like I did with the holidays a long time ago. I did amaryllis, holiday cactus, all that stuff. I kind of wanted to stick with that theme. So propagation is coming up, I think, shortly after that. And then I'm going to go into some of the landscape stuff and back into houseplants. So stay tuned. Easter lily is the next episode. Thanks for listening to Houseplant Homebody, episode 86, Medium Explained. And I'll see you on social media. Bye-bye.